Right now it is time for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. Arthur joins us live on a Monday morning. And what do we talk about? Well, we talk about food, of course. Good morning, Arthur.
Good morning. And, you know, a great celebratory food, for those of us who are celebrating, is a standing rib roast.
Oh, yeah.
You like that, too?
Oh, yeah.
So I'm lobbying for a rib roast for Thanksgiving, since my niece has finally decided that it's okay to break with tradition and not have the turkey, which none of us really like that much. So, I don't know. I'm into roasting meat lately, but I don't have enough people to make a good rib roast to feed. And I guess, you know, sliced cold the next day, it's pretty good too. But I have to go for smaller roasts, since we are only two, and there's only so much meat you can eat. And my rule with roasts is that I don't want to roast anything less than 3 pounds. I don't feel you really can roast small pieces of meat, because I don't even want to go into it. They just don't come out right. So my latest venture was a recipe that I made years ago and haven't made for a few years, but the recipe is in, not only the recipe, but sort of how-to pictures, is in the Southern Italian Table. And it's for a pork loin roast. Sort of everybody likes a pork loin roast, except if you don't eat pork. And it's roasted in a style... let me just say that it uses up a lot of juniper berries. And my whole motivation here was, I know I'm going all over the place, but I, the other day, was inspired to make pork chops, not with a recipe, but inspired by a recipe from Rachel Roddy, who I've talked about, I think just last week I talked about how I love Rachel's work. And by the way, Rachel and all of her recipes are on, and The Guardian, she writes a weekly food column for the British newspaper The Guardian, and you can get it online free. Just put in Rachel Roddy Guardian and it'll all come up, including a recipe that I mentioned last week, but that I never got around to making for various reasons, which is this sort of pie of cabbage and sausage without crust. It's just cabbage and sausage, which is what appealed to me. In any case, she had a recipe for pork chops with fennel and juniper berries. And I could have sworn I had juniper berries, but I couldn't find them. And I'm very well organized when it comes to my spices and dried herbs. And even if I did, they would probably be dead, because, you know, like hard little pebbles, because I haven't made this roast in a long time, or used juniper berries in a long time. So I'm thinking, well, I'm never going to find juniper berries because they're hard to find. But sure enough, they had them in my supermarket around the corner. And I bought a jar, and they're really nice, fresh, fragrant juniper berries. They don't smell like much when they're whole. But as soon as you smash one, which I did immediately, and also put it in my mouth to see what it tasted like, and they're very sort of piney, sweet, woodsy. I think piney is a good word for them. But they also have a little sweetness to them. They're like little berries. There's a seed in the middle, too. So they are little berries, juniper berries. It's from the juniper bush. I'm not sure which bush it is, so don't go out to your backyard and pick juniper berries unless you know for sure that they're edible and that they're going to do something to your food, other than make it bitter or something ugly. Anyway, I bought the juniper berries, and I made these pork chops. I smashed them, not much, and in fact, next time I do this, and I will, I'm going to use more, for two big pork chops, inch-thick pork chops. I smashed a teaspoon of juniper berries and a half a teaspoon of fennel seed. As I said, I will use more next time. First, I crushed the fennel seed in a mortar and pestle. Then I put in the juniper berries and crushed them with the fennel. I rubbed this into the pork chops. It was barely enough for the two pork chops, and I put it in a baking dish with a good amount of olive oil, enough to coat the bottom of the dish and coat the pork chops, and a large clove of garlic sliced up. And I let them marinate at room temperature for several hours before I put them under the broiler. I never use my oven broiler. It's not very good. But Rachel had me broiling pork chops, and the fact is, even though they did not get browned the way I sort of think they should be, they were sensational. And it was 10 minutes start to finish. 5 minutes aside, as close to the heat as I could get, under my broiler, which is a 500-degree oven, really. So I let the broiler go on for about 10 minutes to get the oven hot, too. And I put the pork chops on a rack on top of a sheet pan, and so that some air could get circulated around them. And as I said, 5 minutes per side. And they were juicy and pink in the middle, and part of that, of course, was the quality of the pork. So they looked great in my butcher shop. And I don't trust meat in the supermarkets these days, so I go straight to my butcher. But I'm sure I know you. You're always telling me you have a very good butcher in Sharon. So those are the pork chops. So I had all these juniper berries. Now I'm thinking, what else did I used to make with juniper berries? And I came up with this pork roast that is in the Southern Italian table. And it's a pork loin that you wrap with pancetta. Now, in the old days, I would buy Citerio makes a sliced round pancetta that I used to use for this. And I would go back to that in a pinch. But this time I bought it from my butcher. And the young man, the young butcher who is helping me, not my usual, more experienced butcher, didn't really know what I was asking for, even though I thought I was pretty explicit. And what I was asking for was for him to slice the pancetta and arrange it on a piece of wax butcher paper, slightly overlapping, and I showed him the piece of wax paper he had that he was going to slice the meat on anyway. I said, just, you know, and slightly overlapping. But he didn't do it that way. So this one was a little messy, but it worked anyway. And the technique of wrapping the pork loin, well, let me start with, you don't want to do this with a pork loin less than 2.5 pounds. So I always ask for a 2.5 to 3 pound piece of meat. And preferably, I couldn't get this the other day, but preferably what's called rib end pork loin. And that's, the rib end has darker meat, at least on one side. If it was not boned out, it would be country pork chops. So, you know, those big rib chops. So, no, they're not big. They're small rib chops, country rib chops. Anyway, I sit down on the surface of my board, counter, whatever, a piece of wax paper, and on top of that I put string, butchered twine. My 3 pound roast the other day used 4 butcher strings. It was already tied, by the way, and I left it tied, but now I'm retying it. So I put down the strings, and then I put down the pancetta in that overlapping pattern on top of the strings. Now when I put my pork roast down, by the way, you're gonna rather generously, liberally salt and pepper your pork loin. You put it down on top of the pancetta with the string underneath and the wax paper underneath that, and then it's just a matter of using the wax paper to help you cover the pork roast in pancetta. Outside will be the strings. You tie it all up, 3-4 strings, and now you have a pancetta lined, or I shouldn't say lined, but what do I want to say? Coated, covered pork roast. If you have the book, look, but you don't need the book because this is funny, Marshall. I just, you know, it's, I call it Sorrento-style pork roast, and I'll tell you why in a minute. But I'm not finished with the recipe, by the way. But I decided to look on the Internet and see if I could find any other recipes for a Sorrento-style pork roast. And sure enough, there they were, two, maybe there were even three, references to it. And I called one up. It is word for word my recipe out of the Southern Italian Table, so word for word.
So it was plagiarized.
Totally plagiarized with no credit. She did change. It's a she, I believe, who wrote this recipe in, on the Internet. She did change two ingredients. She did not use juniper berries. I'm telling you, they're not easy to find. And I thought they were going to be expensive, too, but they weren't. I think I paid $5.29 for, you know, a nice-sized jar of them. Anyway, that's cheaper than a lot of herbs and spices. So she changed the juniper berries to rosemary, and she and she used garlic, and I don't use garlic in mine. So what I do is after this roast is wrapped up in pancetta, I put it in a olive oil. Sort of, I just drizzle some olive oil on the bottom of a roasting pan. By the way, the roasting pan should not be enormous. My roasting pan, I measured it one more time, is 12 by 17, and that's about as big as you want it to go, because you want the base, which you're going to put on, to evaporate and reduce somewhat. So you put that in a 450-degree oven for 20 minutes. Now, this is high-temperature roasting. It's not always the way I go, but this recipe, it works out perfectly, I must say, every time. 450 degrees, dry, just wrapped in pancetta, roast the pork for 20 minutes, and after 20 minutes, take it out and pour over it a mixture of 1.5 cups of orange juice with a tablespoon, even a rounded tablespoon, of juniper berries that I've crushed in my mortar and pestle, not to smithereens, but to crush them and open them, and a couple of bay leaves. And by the way, I like to make this early. You should probably let your roast be at room temperature when you put it in the oven. So let it stand for at least a half an hour, an hour, before you put it in the oven. And during that time, you can have the orange juice and the juniper and bay just sitting there waiting. After 20 minutes, pour this mixture over the pork roast. Put it back in the oven. By the way, the fat and juices in the pan could be on the verge of burning. So do not use a dark roasting pan with this oven temperatures. And timing, because a dark-colored roasting pan makes a big difference. It cooks a lot faster. Mine is a stainless steel roasting pan. Aluminum is fine, too, but not dark aluminum, not cow floor aluminum. So anyway, back to this. So now you're putting it back in the oven for 25 minutes, at which point you will take it out and let it stand for at least 15 minutes. The meat will recompose, so to speak, and it'll be juicier. So the juices should have slightly caramelized. The meat will definitely be browned. And those juices, which have some fat, a mixture of pancetta fat, the fresh pork fat from the roast, the tiny bit of olive oil you put in the beginning, plus orange juice, and the nice fragrance of bay leaf and juniper. Mine does, you know, it definitely tastes like orange. But on the other hand, it's not exactly like orange. It's not like a strong flavor of juniper, which, by the way, is the original flavoring of gin, which is why it's called gin, from Ginevra. I think that's French. Anyway, after the meat has recomposed, I want you to slice it thin. When it's not sliced thin, especially at the ends, I must say the ends are not the best part of this roast. And we ate the meat while it was still warm and with some of those delicious orangey juices. But the second day, we ate it sliced on the machine, and the more central part of the meat was so much better than the ends. It really is delicious meat the second day. It will be pink in the middle. A lot of people are afraid of pink pork. How about you?
No, it's meant to be a little pink. It just can't be, you know, that really dark pink with the blood. No, it's meant to be a little pink.
No. It's got to be pink to be juicy. This is a fallacy with pork. There's almost zero trichinosis in America. And the last time I looked, although that was a while ago, any trichinosis you found from pork was from homegrown animals. Excuse me, not commercially produced animals. And by the way, there is a lot of variety in pork these days. I buy pork from the mail order butcher, De Braga, and it is whatever breed they're touting. It is the best pork I've ever eaten. Anyway, another pork roast that I make, interestingly, you cook on a low temperature. And I always think that pork is juicier, in fact, when it's cooked on a low temperature. But as I said, the Sorrento-style pork roast. Oh, so the woman, by the way, the one who did it word for word, I also found one, and you could, I'm sure, find it yourself. There's another one that actually reproduces pages from my book. I was so annoyed by this that I didn't look to see did they actually credit me, is my name on the page that they photographed and put on the internet from the book. And I think they did that because the book has, as I said, how-to instructions on wrapping this piece of meat in pancetta, the only hard part of this recipe. But the other pork roast that I made for years is the Tuscan-style pork roast called arista. I put the accent on the A, like arista, because it's actually a Greek word, and those of us who went to high school in New York City will remember that we had a club called Arista, as we pronounced it, Arista. And Arista was for the smart kids. So the best. It means the best. And this, I don't want to tell the whole story about why it's called Arista in Italian, but Arista is a pork roast, heavily seasoned with rosemary, pepper, and salt. Tuscan food tends to be on the salty side, which is why they have salt-free bread, I always think. So it balances out, you know. So in this case, I definitely want the rib end pork loin. And I asked the butcher if I could, although I know how to do this myself, to open it up to a flat piece of meat and basically butterfly it. And I sprinkle this with, more than sprinkle it, I sort of coat it with a mixture of chopped rosemary, garlic, salt, and pepper. I forgot the garlic. And a significant amount of pepper and a significant amount of rosemary. It doesn't have to be a significant amount of garlic. So let's say a tablespoon of chopped rosemary leaves, fresh rosemary leaves, near tablespoon of freshly ground pepper, 2 teaspoons of salt, and a couple of cloves of garlic minced. You can mince them. Sometimes I slice them and lay them down on the meat, but you can mince it either way. And lay this down on the meat, roll it up, and tie it up. You see, you got to do this yourself, this tying. And I use a sausage kind of tie where you loop it around the meat and then keep looping without, you know, tying it and cutting it every time. And I loop until I'm finished. But again, it should be 2.5 to 3 pound piece of meat. You can make it bigger than that. It doesn't matter how long the roast is. It doesn't matter how many pounds it is. What matters is what is the diameter of the roast. That's what determines the cooking time. And usually at 350 degrees, which is fairly low for a roast, it takes an hour and 15 minutes. And if you want to do the temperature, you can, 155. I think the government tells us way more than that, but don't go further. And, oh, by the way, you can also rub this mixture of rosemary, pepper, and salt on the outside of the roast as well. The garlic just goes inside. And that, again, is sensational. The next day, as sliced meat for sandwiches or whatever. The Tuscans love beans, so I always want to have some boiled white beans just with good olive oil and salt on them. Anyway, I used the same method. I don't use the same method. I don't know what I'm saying. There's another roasting method that I use, which is a high-temperature method and a little quirky because it's a short cooking time. But then you wrap the meat in parchment paper and newspaper. I'm sure I've outlined this on the air before. And it cooks in its own heat. So this recipe, which I'm sure you can also find on the internet somewhere, but it's not really a recipe, was devised originally for a filet of beef, meaning, filet mignon. And if you get a whole filet, make sure you get off the skin and have it reasonably well trimmed. Sometimes you can buy these fillets and you got to do all this yourself. Sometimes you want to pay the butcher to do it or the supermarket to do it. But you can also do this with a small piece of fillet, with the thick end of the fillet. If you have a whole fillet, you want to turn the tail around and tie it so that it's more the same diameter. Again, diameter all the way along, and you'll have to tie it yourself probably. So you, salt and pepper this very well, and I preheat the oven to 500 degrees. Now, if you have a dirty oven, be aware that you will probably create some smoke, or at least a smell for a period of time while whatever's in there is caramelizing, is burning. And 500 degrees, and when it's well preheated at 500 degrees, put in your roast. Again, I like to do this on a rack on top of a sheet pan. And roast and turn immediately as soon as you put it in the 500-degree oven, turn the oven down to 450 degrees. Now, a usual filet, again, left out at room to become room temperature before you roast it, takes, depending on how well you want it done, 25 to 30 minutes. 25 is going to be rare. 30 minutes is going to be medium rare. And take it out, and as soon as you take it out of the oven, wrap it in parchment paper and wrap that. I always have this all prepared before I'm ready to take the roast out. 10 sheets of the New York Times, meaning a broadsheet newspaper. If you don't get a broadsheet newspaper, double the width of a tabloid newspaper. And 10 sheets deep, parchment paper. Wrap the roast as soon as it comes out of the oven in the parchment paper, in the newspaper. Tuck it all in really tight and let it sit at least for an hour. But you can let it sit for many hours. The meat's, medium rare for sure, is, or medium even, is not going to be hot meat anyway. And this is delicious even at room temperature. And years ago I read this was called the butler's method, because I guess the butler unwrapped it and served it from the butler's pantry. But anyway, it really works. I was doubtful at first myself. And it even works for what I can buy at my butcher, and I'm sure you'll see in the supermarket case from time to time, is a boned leg of lamb already tied and ready for the oven. And sometimes my butcher has small ones that are, you don't want a piece of meat that's more than 4 inches in diameter for this to work. So 3.5 is even better. So if he has a small, narrow one, which he sometimes does, I buy that, and I roast it exactly the same way. Preheat to 500 degrees, put it in the oven, turn the oven down to 450. But in the case of the lamb, it takes 35 minutes. I've done this many times. And in my oven, it takes 35 minutes to produce beautiful, not at the very, you know, the this wrapped lamb is not exactly the same diameter all the way. So the ends will be a little bit more well done, and the middle will be absolutely pink and juicy and delicious, and I'm getting hungry.
Juicy and
delicious. I do have more pork roast left in the refrigerator. Yeah. I could slice that up and eat it for breakfast.
Now, you're going to kill me for this. But I made once for my my son, Mark, and his wife. We had him over for dinner once. And I made a standing rib roast for four. There was four of them. And I made it, and I know you're going to kill me for this, but I made it in my Showtime rotisserie oven that I had at the time.
You made it where?
In my Showtime rotisserie oven.
Oh, why would I kill you for that? Then I wish I had a rotisserie oven.
It came out.
I think it would be great.
It was unbelievable.
It's a roast, after all.
Yeah. Oh, it was unbelievable.
I'm sure. You know, I've toyed with the idea of buying a rotisserie. I grew up with rotobroil. Do you remember rotobroil?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Yeah. So I grew up with the rotobroil, which is was called rotobroil because it, inside was a rotisserie, and on top of the heating coils were on the over, of course, the spit.
Yeah.
But those same heating coils would also heat a surface on the top, and you could broil on the top, and you could rotisserie at the same time inside. Now this gizmo was invented by the man, and now I'm not remembering his name, but he's the man who was in the wheelchair that was pushed overboard.
That cruise ship.
Right.
Yes.
He and his wife were on the cruise, and he back-talked to the terrorists the pirates who had taken over the ship, and they threw him overboard. I want to say Klinghoffer, but maybe that is his name. Something that comes to mind. Well, years later, so I inherited the rotobroil from my grandmother, and I had it for years. It shuffled around from apartment to house, and after many years, the front door of it, which was glass, broke. So I threw out the whole thing. No sooner did I throw out the whole thing than Jeffrey Steingarten, who was then the food columnist for Vogue, told me he was looking everywhere for a rotobroil. And I don't know why, maybe in those days, it was back a while, Jeff didn't know how to look for this on the internet, but I did. And I found one, it was from a man on Long Island whose father had just died. And he went into his father's garage to find that it was full of, still in the original boxes, brand new, various appliances, including several rotobroils and a lot of blenders. His father was, I think, a milkman, and he used to meet quotas, and every time he met a quota, they would give him an appliance. So this man was trying to sell off these appliances, so I bought one for Jeff. I never bought one for myself, which I regretted, but I talked about this on the radio, and I get a phone call from, I'm going to say his name was Klinghoffer, because I think it really was.
It was, okay.
So, yeah, So I get a call from Florida, from Klinghoffer's daughter, to tell me that it was, and Klinghoffer was probably still in the news at the time, and she to tell me that it was her father who invented the rotobroil. She was a listener.
The rotobroil, and the reason I laugh is I remember it. It was stainless steel, like everything back then.
No, it was like a chrome finish.
Well, that's what I mean. It was, but it was like a well, Stanley, it looked like a car bumper, yes. And I think they called it infrared back in those days.
Let me just say, back in these days, too, because my oven, which is only 10 years old, it claims to be infrared, okay? There's a flame in the middle, and there are coils around the flame. Whatever it is, it doesn't brown meat. It browns other things. If I need to gratiné something, I can stick it under the broiler. For other reasons, I stick things under to melt cheese on toast in the days when I still ate toast. Anyway, I'm still on this diet, by the way, and I am losing weight, but although it's very slowly. And that's why I'm into roasts, because I make a roast for the two of us. It's good for at least three meals.
There's nothing wrong with roasts. Nothing.
No, and then I only have to think about the vegetables.
That's right.
Which I'm much more interested in cooking, to be truthful here. Roasts sort of intrigue me. And I one of the only shows that I actually record from the Food Network is Man Fire Food.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, all these hosts annoy me, I have to say. I don't even know their names. But the people that they interview are interesting. And not annoying. So, you have to watch it for the not annoying people.
That's it. All right, Arthur, we will speak to you next
week. All right, well, I look forward to roasting you next week.
Okay, thanks, Arthur. Take care.
You.
Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, here on Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com. Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the Food Maven, John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, and on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, rubiners.com. Hillsdale Home Chef, more information, 518-325-7000, hgshomechef.com.